Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 6th of December. An article in the Sunday Review section of the New York Times caught our attention. Perhaps you had a chance to see it. The headline is "How the Food Industry Eats Your Kids' Lunch." And it starts like this: an increasingly cozy alliance between companies that manufacture processed foods and companies that serve the meals is making students a captive market, fat and sick, while pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. At a time of fiscal austerity, these companies are seducing school administrators with promises to cut costs through privatization. Parents who want healthier meals, meanwhile, are outgunned. The author of the report is with us this hour, Lucy Commissar, an investigative reporter and author who received support from the Investigative Fund, a project of the Nation Institute, for this study. She is the only American reporter whose beat is the secret underbelly of the global financial system, offshore banks and corporate secrecy and its links to corporate crime, tax evasion by the corporations and the very rich, empowerment of dictators, bribery and corruption, drug and arms trafficking, and terrorism. Makes me think I'll need to ask a few questions along those lines during the course of this hour. She's written many, many articles since 1997 for The Nation, Wall Street Journal. She has won a number of awards for her work, the National Press Club, Sigma Delta Chi, National Headliner Awards for Miami coverage of the Ponzi schemer Alan Stanford. She's also a theater critic. Or she's got a lot of talents, and a member of the Drama Desk, the organization of New York theater critics, writers, and editors. Her particular interest is the political aspects of theater. Hi, Lucy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi. Good morning. I'm delighted to be on the show.
I'm really glad to have you on. I'm just, you know, overwhelmed with all you do. I feel like I could ask you a million questions in all kinds of directions. I didn't know that when I read the article that you wrote, and look where we could go. But we will start with food. I didn't know about this issue. Can you talk about, we're talking about a huge number of students, 32 million children in the U.S. getting lunch at schools that participate in the National School Lunch Program, and they're getting Chicken McNuggets?
Yes, they're getting stuff which is ersatz food, I think, and it's all about money. The schools sometimes because they just don't want to oversee their own kitchens, but in many cases because they totally outsource the food provision to what are called food service management companies. The big ones in the U.S. are Sodexo, Aramark, and Compass, and these companies make deals with the big food processing companies. It could be Tyson's or Kellogg's to get processed food, which is what I call ersatz food. A chicken nugget is they take the chicken and mash it up and add filler, and then they fry it.
Yeah.
Fry it.
Yeah.
So by the time the kids get it, it's junk food. Well, why would they want to do that? Why do they make a deal with these big companies? Because the companies pay them rebates. It's illegal. These companies make secret agreements to get rebates anywhere from 5 to 50%, depending on the item. And the Department of Agriculture discovered this less than 10 years ago, and they did an audit, and they finally issued some rules that in 2007, saying that the schools could not claim reimbursement from the Agriculture Department for the rebate part. Well, the schools hadn't even known that in their cost-plus contracts, part of them, what they were paying as cost wasn't really cost because the companies were getting money back as rebates. So then the companies, the food service companies, started changing the label and calling them prompt payment discounts.
Mm.
And prompt payment, instead of a couple of days, could be 1 month or 2 months. And it's all because they get these rebates. So the result is the studies that I quoted show that this kind of processed food has more salt, more sugar, more trans fat than plain nourishing food, plain vegetables you get from the local farmer, or plain chicken that you can get directly from the National Commodities Program. The schools get that for free from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which spends $1 billion a year buying these things from farmers. But then, and particularly if there are food service management companies, they ship these good products back to the processors, to make junk. So not only do the kids get junk food, but the local farmers, local companies, like a local baker, they don't get the business. They would like to supply the local schools, but they can't because they're aced out by the global companies.
What's the problem with taking all of that food, all of those fresh apples that you talk about, sweet potatoes, chickens, turkeys, and having schools get it directly from local people and then cooking it?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it. They would get some of it directly from the Agriculture Department, which started this program many years ago, largely to support agriculture, but they had to do something with the products they were buying, so they gave them to the schools for free. And they, schools are entitled, they have certain credits. They're entitled to a certain amount. They can't just ask for endless amounts of chicken or anything else, but they get a quota. But there are also things that they buy that they need outside this commodities program. And, of course, they could get them from local farmers. They can get milk from some small dairy instead of from a huge dairy. I was told by one of the activists in Rhode Island that she found that the schools were paying more for milk because they were getting them from a huge company dairy instead of from a local dairy, because the dairy was paying kickbacks, and so the schools in the end had to end up paying the cost of it. Of course, you can get it from local people. It's healthier and it improves the economy, but the money then would not go to these big businesses.
Is this a recent thing?
I don't know how far back it goes. On a certain level, some experts told me that there have been kickbacks going back many years. And it's not, by the way, only in public schools. It's also in hospitals. It is also in colleges. It's also in the U.S. government. The FBI gets its food service done by one of these food service management companies. And they are all suffering from these inflated prices. But it has increased maybe over the last 10 years or so as the hold of these food service management companies has increased. So you see, for instance, the commodities going to be processed. In 2006, there were about $300 million out of the $1 billion sent to be processed. So that's about 30%. Now it's $445 million out of a billion plus. So that's an increase of 50% only in about 5 years. So it is going up.
And tell me more about these companies. Some of them are in France. They're in England. Are they very, very profitable?
These are global companies. Sodexo, for example, is a $20 billion company.
Wow.
It exists in 80 countries. It has several hundred thousand employees. So this is not just an American issue. That's one that's based in France. Chartwell's Compass is based in the UK, and Aramark is based in Philadelphia. But these are all global companies, multi-billion dollar companies.
And they are saying, you talk to them, that any increase in fruit and vegetables might result in plate waste.
Well, they all oppose the new regulations that were put out for comment by the USDA as a result of several years of study, and the goal was to cut out trans fats and cut way down on salt. They didn't say anything about sugar, but the experts in the area felt that it was better than before, and it was a good first step. Then they asked for comments. Every one of these food service management companies, as well as companies like Tyson and Conagra and the Dairy Council, they all put in comments which oppose the regulation. And their argument is, well, the kids are just not going to eat this healthy food, so we shouldn't put it out there. One of them said they wanted They opposed the rule that said you can't serve starchy vegetables at breakfast. That's potatoes. And there were other regulations about breakfast foods, and the argument was, well, the kids are not going to eat anything if we don't give them their normal breakfast. Well, what do they mean? They mean fruit tarts and sugary cereals. That's the normal breakfast, or sugary donuts. That's what kids would like. Well, that's why kids in this country, there's an epidemic of obesity. It's quite alarming that something like a third of the children in this country are overweight, and a half of those third are obese. We're talking about an epidemic of diabetes down the road.
Right. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, has taken on the issue of obesity. Has she taken on the issue that you wrote about as well or not?
Well, no, I don't think so. And after Congress passed the Agriculture Appropriation Bill, that included two items. One, it knocked out the USDA proposal to say that starchy vegetables could be sold and served only once a week, and that the few spoonfuls of tomato paste on pizza could not be counted as a full serving of vegetable.
My.
The Congress did that, and then President Obama signed it. And I don't know whether she discussed that with him, but we haven't heard anything about that. It's really nice to have all kinds of consciousness-raising meetings and conferences. But when you get down to the fact that a 13-plus billion-dollar USDA program, because not only does the U.S. Give the $1 billion in commodities, but it subsidizes the school lunches for low-income and slightly above. So either it's a subsidy, the lunch is subsidized, or it's free. So the U.S. government is paying $13.3 billion, and so it has a lot of power over things like the nutrition. I didn't hear any big objections to saying you can't serve potatoes every day and you can't count the tomato paste on pizza as a full serving of vegetables.
Right.
I didn't hear anything from her. I didn't hear anything except, of course, from some of the activist groups around the country, and I think they are growing, but they don't have the clout that these big companies did. So I didn't hear anybody objecting to that in Congress.
Let's go back to those rebates. You write about Andrew Cuomo, who was then New York State Attorney General, winning this very large settlement over Sodexo's taking such rebates. Is this a move? Tell me more about that, and is it an action that's being taken by other states?
It all started a couple of years ago. I was contacted by some whistleblowers in Massachusetts, two brothers who worked for hospitals. They worked for Sodexo, who had the contracts for a couple of hospitals in Massachusetts to do the they did food supply, they did the facilities management. If it was a new boiler needed, they would be in charge of that. The hospitals just wanted to be hospitals and didn't want to take care of all this maintenance and matters that they felt extraneous to healthcare. But these two brothers discovered that Sodexo was demanding rebates from their suppliers. In this case, it wasn't food, because these brothers were involved in maintenance. It was some other things, but they showed me evidence of rebate checks that were sent to Sodexo by the suppliers. So I wrote about that. The brothers, by the way, were fired by Sodexo and sued, and I wrote about that. And they also provided information to several attorneys general, Massachusetts, I think Connecticut, and New York. I don't know that the Massachusetts or Connecticut didn't do anything, but the New York Attorney General, then Andrew Cuomo, did move on this. And about a year or so after I had written a story for In These Times, and over a year after that story came out and explained what was going on, Sodexo settled with New York State for $20 million. The brothers got $3 million, and the other amount was divided among a long list of New York State institutions, mostly schools, that had been cheated by Sodexo. And according to the Assistant Attorney General who was in charge of this case, he told me that he had been contacted by other states who are interested in following up themselves on this.
Mm-hmm. What's the extent of these food management companies, Lucy? Do most school districts in the country make use of them?
It's about 25%, but it's growing because they are promising that they can do everything more cheaply. What they do is they cut back on the skilled kitchen workers. Mm-hmm. So these people either lose their jobs or get cuts in pay, and they also save money on the food because they get this bad food. You need a skilled worker to take a piece of chicken and make it into a lunch.
Sure.
You need an unskilled worker to put something prepackaged into the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
And they may so they save on that. They save on good food, and they save on skilled workers. But they don't necessarily save the district money because they rake off the profits for themselves.
And children pay the price.
And children pay the price because they're getting bad food. If you know, would they argue, well, we are making available some of this good food. And in one case in Rhode Island, one of the activists said, yes, they said broccoli was on the menu, she said, and I went to the kitchen, and for a high school of 1,200, there was one case of broccoli. So it's a lot of it is public relations. They argue that they're doing all kinds of good things and raising kids' consciousness about food. Well, what do you think a kid is going to do when their choice for lunch, you know, either a high school kid or public school kid, the choice for lunch is a plate, a healthy plate of chicken and broccoli or a slice of pizza? What do you think that kid is going to do?
Oh, gee, I just don't know.
So if you're a parent and you're making dinner for your kid at home, do you say to the kid, would you like to have some nice chicken and broccoli, or would you like
right.
a pizza? So
right.
what do you think the kid's going to say?
Right.
That's really the problem.
Well, it's unbelievable that you mentioned hospitals and schools, the two places where, for heaven's sake, you would think it's just common knowledge that you need to eat good things in order to grow and be strong and think during the day, and hospitals where you're trying to recover.
Yeah. But the problem is that in most cases, the people running these institutions are focused on what they consider their main job. Hospitals are taking care of sick people, and schools are teaching kids, but they don't realize that the kind of food that they get is very important, an important part of their mission, and they can't just let it go by because they're too busy with what they think is their main job.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Lucy Commissar is our guest this hour. I would recommend that you go online to the New York Times Sunday Review section is where her article is, How the Food Industry Eats Your Kids' Lunch. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today. Oh, we're going to have fun. You have to like Judy Garland, I think, or maybe you'll learn to like her if you don't know much about her. The author of an enormous book about a woman with enormous talent, Judy, a legendary film career. John Fricke will be with us. John is an Emmy-winning documentary producer. He is actually from Milwaukee and will be doing some fundraising for his old high school, Marshall High School, while he is here. There's a special showing of Meet Me in St. Louis. And he'll talk about Judy Garland, who performed at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, and her parents met, actually, in Superior, Wisconsin. So we'll talk about this enormous talent who sacrificed her childhood to the studios. And we'll hear some music, too. So that's coming up, hour number two. Let's go to your phone calls for Lucy Commissar. Her piece is in the New York Times on Sunday, How the Food Industry Eats Your Kids' Lunch. We start with Kathy from Watertown. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. One day I had stayed home from working on Food Network. I believe I saw Rachel Ray, and her special guest was President Bill Clinton. And they were discussing a program that they've jointly gone in together to feed healthier lunches to schools and to feed vegetables and all that. And they showed the schools where they go in, and Rachel prepared the meal plan, showed the people how to prepare the lunches, and the kids just loved it. She said, if you make the food delicious, they'll eat it. And the kids were, it was an elementary school children, and they were so enthusiastic about it. You didn't see plates wasted.
What did they make?
Oh, they made carrots. They had tomatoes. They had all kinds of, you know, vegetables that they did for the kids in different and creative ways. And they would incorporate, they did a chili with a lot of vegetable chili, actually, with I don't believe there was even just any meat in it.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, President Clinton looks fabulous now, and he's a very strong advocate of cutting meat. But for children, you still need protein. But the children loved it. And, you know, if I serve my children those kind of foods creatively, they love it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take that over anything. And if you start them young. So I just think there's hope. hopefully.
Thanks for the hope, Kathy. Lucy?
Well, I think that's right. If you just have the energy and the creativity, kids will like that good food. I think it's up to the parents to try to get their schools to adopt those kinds of programs.
Right. And there are movements afoot to do just that, to have local food, to have gardens at schools. They're just not big enough, huh?
Yes, I agree. Under some legislation, the schools were required to have wellness committees, which included parents on them. And if active parents become part of those committees, they can try to get better food adopted. But a lot of parents have, or many parents have told me that they have been blocked from this. In one case in Westchester County, New York, they had a great program with one principal. A new principal came in, and Aramark went back to serving pizzas and sweet drinks. So, that principal knocked the parents off the wellness committee. So it takes parents getting together, but there are all over the country in small groups of parents that have tried to do this, and there are some parents that are blogging about this. I think they ought to get together. I haven't seen any kind of a national coordination of this, because I got some emails after my story, and one woman said that she was very funny. She said, I live in the fattest zip code in New Mexico.
Oh, my.
And she said she was wanted to, how could she get her Albuquerque schools to get better food for the kids? And I didn't know where to send her. I gave her the email addresses of some of the activist leaders that I knew about, but there isn't any one place to turn. So you hear anecdotes about people are doing this in one town or one city. And I think it's hard for parents that don't have a connection to know how to begin this.
Scott in Highland. Hi.
Hi, how are you today?
All right, Scott, how are you?
Good. Love your program. My wife and I, we've over the last number of years especially, trying to eat particularly healthy and trying to make sure our kids eat healthy. And we saw a program, I think it started last year on TV, called Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution. And where he essentially goes into some school districts and tries to address this issue. He's a famous chef from Britain, and he went to Huntington, West Virginia. He went to Los Angeles, and in addition to his food education thing, he's kind of fighting the political things that we're talking about and the business problems. Anyways, with that and with the knowledge we've gained from these issues, we essentially don't have our kids eat the hot lunches at school anymore. We have them pack a lunch of food that we send them. But my question is, and you sort of answered this already, but what as consumers, what can we do to try to overturn this? And I'll take the questions off
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Well, yeah, I think that parents have to organize and press their own school boards. The schools are the ones that make the contracts. Usually it's done in a school district, so it's not just an individual school, but there's a school food authority in every school district, and they make the decisions. They decide whether to send the commodities to get processed into junk food or whether to cook them. They decide whether the school should have a real kitchen or just a couple of big microwaves. So that's where parents have to get together. I think through the Parent Teachers Association, that's one place to start. To find other parents who have the same point of view, to try and get on the wellness committee, to go to the school and see what's in the school vending machines. Are they selling stuff full of sugar, or are they selling healthy drinks? And so if you just go to the schools and look at the menu, if you're allowed into the cafeteria, find out what's on the menu and see what kids have on their plates. I think if parents start to be active, that is when some changes can happen.
And you would think that it has to happen at school. When you were mentioning that choice of what would you like for dinner, dear? Would you like chicken and broccoli, or would you like a pizza? The bad choices are so ubiquitous for young people that even if you have the best intentions, it is very hard as a parent to get your children to want something other than pizza or McDonald's. Or it seems to be the food of choice. If you have good foods of choice at school, it makes it a little bit easier.
Yes, and especially for poor kids, that may be their main meal. Not just their main good meal, but if they have breakfast and they have lunch, they may not have too much later on.
Right.
And it certainly would be their most nutritious meal to have good food in school.
Right. Judy in Milwaukee, hi.
Yes, I am very much enjoying this program. What happens with the enormous increase in people who are sensitive to wheat and gluten and to the children with high blood sugar who are pre-diabetic? How, what does this do? This kind of ersatz food that you have no idea what's in it.
Yes, and of course, the prepackaged, you don't know what's there. If it's a kitchen with real cooks, they can decide not to put a lot of salt or sugar on the food they make. But if you look into what's on the back of a package of anything you buy that's packaged, there may be a lot of sugar, and certainly there's a lot of salt in these the regulations. When the proposal was to reduce salt a little at a time over a 10-year period, so it wasn't even a very sharp reduction. And the regulation, as was put out by the USDA, actually said, we know it will take the food manufacturers time to put in, to make new menus, to figure out how to put it, make their products with less salt, because of course salt adds to flavor. So their concern in putting out this regulation seemed to me to be not, let's get rid of the salt because that's really bad for kids. It was, how can we make sure that the food manufacturers can have enough time to reduce salt so they don't lose business? I think that's the wrong priority.
Mm-hmm. Lucy, tell me the process here again. Who does the cooking of this food? Where is it all put together?
Well, it depends on what you're cooking. If you're buying pre-processed food, it is trucked to you, and your staff puts it in the microwave. If you're cooking real food, you have to have a kitchen, and you have to have kitchen workers who are skilled and know how to cook food. It can be done in an individual kitchen, or if there's a school district with a number of schools, maybe they'll have a central kitchen, and then the food can be trucked out to the particular schools. It depends on how they want to work it, and it depends on the distances.
But if somebody's making those chicken McNuggets from that chicken that the government has purchased, it's being processed by Tyson?
Yeah, or Pilgrims.
I see.
That's who's getting the business.
Yeah.
Because that's who's paying the kickbacks to the food service management companies. In the case of schools buying them directly, they're not getting any kickbacks.
Right.
They're paying whatever their deal is, because a lot of schools that don't have these contracts on their own may be buying these pre-processed foods, although they're not as likely to.
So the food management companies then truck the food to various schools?
Well, to the schools they have contracts with.
Right.
They have contracts with about a quarter of the school districts, particularly in the large cities. They have more contracts. They are more heavily located in the large cities. So they truck the food to whatever. It's the same way as if you went to the supermarket and bought chicken nuggets, that those chicken nuggets come on a truck from the production facility. The school gets them the same way.
Yeah. Thanks, Judy, for your call. Let's go to Rachel in Madison. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I think this is just a fascinating topic, and I just wanted to chime in on the sugar aspect. I know obesity is a huge problem in the schools, but I do a lot of research on sugar issues and sugar intolerance, and I think that it is particularly deadly because of the effects it has on children's learning abilities. It also has horrible effects on mental health, emotional health, emotional well-being, and again, it severely reduces children's learning ability. And a lot of these, like you said, a lot of the children who from poorer families rely on subsidized food. So once again, they're getting the shaft in their learning abilities. And I talk to a lot of teachers who say their kids just zone out, you know, after mealtimes. And maybe that's anecdotal evidence, but I think that has a big, big part, actually, of a lot of, you know, our children's lack of ability to focus and to remember information and to recall it and to critically think. I mean, that sounds maybe, you know, over the top or hyperbolic, but I think that really is the case. I think it's just, I think it's bordering on child abuse.
One of the studies that I quoted for my article is from research by a professor who found that indeed eating the foods that were high in sugar and fat resulted in lower educational results. The kids had worse test scores. So you're quite right about that.
Were there any people, you quote this spokesperson from Chartwell's food processor, saying our culinary philosophy as a company is to promote scratch cooking where possible and encourage variety and nutritionally balanced meals. Do they do that?
I would have to see what they're doing in all of the schools, but in the cases I was looking at, that was not necessarily true. The question is not the kind of public relations statements which says we are really good guys. I want to see the numbers. What is wherever possible? That's pretty much of a weasel word. It's easy to say, well, it's just not possible. You need to show me statistically the extent to which you are doing scratch cooking and the extent to which you're carrying out what you say in your statement, and I haven't seen that. I didn't get that. I asked all the three big food service management companies. I told them what I was going to be writing, and I asked for their comments, and I didn't see anybody that gave me those kinds of statistics. They gave me a lot of public relations about how we are for XYZ and how we are going to all these conferences. Sodexo talked about how they go to all Michelle Obama's conferences and they sign up to, you know, many statements of promises, but you have to look at the kitchen and see what's, and you have to look at the kids' plates.
Right. Thanks, Rachel. David in Highlandville, Iowa. Hi, David.
Good morning, Kathleen. Great program.
Thanks.
Your guest mentioned other government agencies that were served by big service food service companies. I was wondering if part of her study also included our federal prison and state prisons. Are they getting better quality food than our own students?
I would rather doubt that. I didn't look into state prisons, and that's it would be all you'd have to do is call the administration of the prison and ask them if they have outside food service. Although I would suspect that since the prisoners are there and can be required to do work, it may be that the prisoners themselves are cooking the food. But you would have to find out what's on the menus and where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the same thing. Yep.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the call. Arun on the road. Hi.
Hi there. Good morning, ladies.
Morning.
I am a physician myself and wanted to comment a couple of quick points on the general issue of nutrition as well as health. First off, I was struck by the irony. I have been an NPR listener for many decades that Sodexo is a sponsor. I'm sure you people know that, of NPR.
No, I was not aware of that.
I hear their name all the time, every day.
Uh-huh.
But I think the whole problem is that the food issue goes back to what we as parents and society tell our children. It's not just do as we say, but also do as we do. So it has to start with the parents. My children were vegetarian, and for the 12 years of school, they took lunch from home because the school lunch was no good, as your guest very correctly points out. And I do believe this is a very serious issue in terms of big corporations running our daily lives, whether it is school lunch or $1,000 Defense Department toilets or other problems. So I think food is what makes us who we are, and I wish you all more power in discussing what importance there is to daily good nutrition and exercise. Thank you, and I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you, Arun. Lucy?
Well, no, I think that's quite right, and a lot of parents are sending the kids with packaged lunches that they make at home for this, but it shouldn't have to be that way. A huge amount of money is going for this program, and the food should be good.
Let's go to a couple emails. Here's one from Marion Custer. Please discuss the issue of cost as a barrier to more healthy food in schools, especially if the impulse is to buy locally grown food. There are so many hidden costs in cheap food that when there's a decision to step outside the global food economy, it costs more. Are taxpayers willing to pay more in local taxes to support healthy food if the choices are limited to what can be made, even if cooked locally? If the purchase of food is limited to commodities, locally grown, sustainably grown food is priced to address the health issues that are ignored in the industrial food system.
Well, I think that one issue that's interesting, food is the only part of school budget that is supposed to either make a profit or not take a loss. Everything else in the school budget is just paid for. You pay for the teachers and you pay for the plant, and nobody says, are the teachers making a profit? But only the food part is separate, and that's supposed to not cost more than the money that comes from the federal government as subsidy or what the kids pay. And that's part of the problem, too. It's wrong. And you'd have to, you know, we don't really know the difference between what we're paying or what schools are paying and parents are paying for the processed food and what imaginatively cooked food, fresh food, would cost. Aside from Jamie Oliver, the Brit that was mentioned, in the U.S. you have two chefs, Kate Adamick and Ann Cooper, who are working with particular schools around the country to develop scratch cooking that is affordable and is healthy. So they tell me that it can be done. And it's just a question of budgeting properly so that the money is not going to the global corporations, so that it's going to places that will provide the good food. It's very hard to know unless you get talented, good people who can figure out menus that will work on the budgets of schools, whether or not that can be done. But Kate Adamick and Ann Cooper tell me that it is being done in the districts that they are working with.
We welcome more phone calls momentarily. Lucy Commissar is our guest. We're referencing a piece that appeared in the Sunday New York Times, Sunday Review. Isn't that what they call it now? Used to be Week in Review for so long. Sunday Review, How the Food Industry Eats Your Kids' Lunch. Lucy is a reporter Well, she does all kinds of work. She writes for The Nation and Wall Street Journal. She's won many, many awards for her investigative reporting. She's a theater critic as well. And I love this description. She's the only American reporter whose beat is the secret underbelly of the global financial system, offshore bank and corporate secrecy, and its links to corporate crime, tax evasion by the corporations and the very rich, bribery and corruption, empowerment of dictators, and arms trafficking and terrorism. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Our number, did I give it to you? 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, John Fricke will be joining us, probably the world's foremost expert on Judy Garland. We go back to phone calls. Jesse in Oneida. Hi, Jesse.
Good morning, Lucia, and good morning, Kathy. I listen to your show almost every day. I just wanted to mention that there is a program in Wisconsin. It's titled Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. And basically what the program does is helps school systems develop plans to create a program for farm-to-school networks so that you can, you know, actually get information on how to contact growers in your area so that you can, and there are participating farms in the Oneida area. I'm the food service administrator for the Oneida Nation School System, and again, I do not have a website for them. However, I believe if you Google, you can find it on Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems.
Great. And so the kind of food that you're getting for Oneida is good, nutritional?
Well, you know, we have we do have a farm on which we grow bison, or actually, and market bison. We also have one of the only true excuse me, I'm a little nervous.
No, don't be nervous.
The
it's
only
just,
true
just
beef program that where we get beef from the other tribes in South Dakota.
Oh.
And then it's shipped here, and then they're finished here. They're grass-fed beef, and it's healthier. You can custom order it, so it's lean. We use it in our school system. And we also have an organic farm that is affiliated with the tribe that grows products for us, like potatoes, onions, corn that we use in our corn soup, things like that.
Wonderful. Could you send me more information about what you're doing? It sounds like a follow-up show here.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks, Jesse.
Sure.
You can just send.
That's a really excellent program, and there are some efforts around the country doing farm to school, and this sounds like a really very good example that other schools ought to try to follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure does.
They may not be able to grow their own bison, but they can copy some of what this program has been doing, it seems, very creatively.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, send us an email. It's just, what is it, dunk@wpr.org. We'd like to hear from you. Here's an email from Pam in Madison. Our new food service director is formerly of Sodexo. He started off by removing chocolate milk and cold sugared cereal in the morning on a trial basis. I was upset it wasn't on a permanent basis. Now he's giving children a choice between two entrees at lunch. They're just as bad as you can imagine, a choice between pizza or chicken fingers. I'm stunned, especially since Edgerton School District serves real food to their students, and so does the Chilton School District. There are lots of good food service programs out there, and we can't accept anything less than good food for our kids.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. So how do you get to be like the good districts, which are not doing that? I think the parents have to object and try to get to copy what the other districts are doing, but certainly that's no choice for lunch.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in one place a principal who changed from healthy to non-healthy, bringing back the junk food. Who makes decisions? Does it vary from school to school about food?
Yeah, well, yes, it does, because the contract with the food service, in this case it was a food service management company, the school has to agree to the contract. This was in Katona, Lewisboro, New York, and the school agrees to the contract. And a very activist group of parents had and a very good superintendent of schools had put in some good programs, and that superintendent then retired. A new one came in, and they forgot about the good programs. The person who I spoke to, her name is Donna Walsh, who had been the president of the school board. She said, it was like it was all over. You know, we Aramark now, when they talk with us, they knew that they didn't have to pay any attention because the new superintendent, a man named Robert Rowley, was not interested. So it depends. You've got to get the superintendent who signs the contract to make certain demands and say, our contract requires these things. And it can be very different, and good food can turn to bad and the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Vanessa in Madison, hi.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. And Lucy, thank you for writing this article. I think it's wonderful to be bringing more attention to school meals. I am with the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at UW-Madison and also represent the National Farm-to-School Network for the Great Lakes region. And I just wanted to share a few resources for Wisconsin residents who want to bring more local food into school.
Great.
There's one resource available to everybody nationwide, and it's the National Farm-to-School Network that has tons of resources in general how to start a farm-to-school program or get local food into schools, and that's farmtoschool.org, and it pops up with a map, and you can click on your state and find resources for your state, but also national resources. And in Wisconsin, we have a lot of great tools, including the new farm-to-school toolkit that just went out, and it's for food service staff. And there's also one for agricultural producers who want to get their local food into schools. And that can be found online at www.cias.wisc.edu/toolkit. And for folks who really want to get involved, Wisconsin is having a farm-to-school summit on January 25th in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Great.
And there's more information on that online. So for folks who are interested, there really are tools and people to get in touch with here in Wisconsin to make this happen. Thank
great,
you.
Vanessa. Great. And you, too, please be in touch with us. So there'll be a show coming on this around January 25, because that would be good. That would be good. All right. Thanks so much for your call. Bill on the road. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I guess I sort of object to some of the tone of this whole discussion this hour. There's a lot of good information here, but It does. Human beings have a tendency to chafe under anything that smacks of social engineering, and kids especially are this way. If they're told what they should eat, they're not going to want to eat it. But part of the problem, too, is that good food, it sounds like you're talking about broccoli that's been oversteamed and chicken breasts with no skin on it, poached, you know, for a few minutes. Into this bland, rubbery, awful thing.
Well, we didn't get into the details. I would assume it wouldn't be what you just described, but
what I'm saying is that it's possible to make pizza into a healthy, good food that isn't loaded with salt and sugar and fat.
Okay. Lucy?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's possible. Haven't really seen it. And you don't want to have kids that are eating pizza and French fries every day, which was what they might do if that's what they were offered. I mean, you can't assume that good food has to taste bad. There was somebody on the program earlier who talked about good food being made so that it tastes very good.
Sure.
And I think that's what has to be done.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call, Bill. And we'll take one more call. Annie in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. Hey. I went to grade school and high school in the 50s and early 60s, and the food was pretty rotten back then. I mean, that's where the term mystery meat comes from. And the kids weren't obese back then, so there's got to be a perfect storm. Has the food ever gotten better and now it's getting worse, or is it just that people aren't getting good food at home, plus kids aren't going outside to play? I mean, it's got to be a whole conglomeration of stuff, not just what they're eating at lunchtime.
We have about 40 seconds, Lucy.
Well, I think there's a lot more sugary drinks that are being foisted on them. I don't remember having that kind of thing in my school. We didn't have
right.
vending machines
no.
where every time you got a soda, you know, if you were stuffing yourself full of sugar. I think that's one of the reasons that's been pointed to.
Yeah, exactly. So are you one of our go-to people if we want to do a show on why nobody who created all the problems on Wall Street and created problems for this country are not in jail?
Yeah.
You are?
I'm working on some stories that relate to this, and
okay.
I haven't particularly focused on the issue of why they're not in jail, although I certainly agree with you. I am working on a story that has to do with the stock market corruption and the corruption of the
okay.
big banks relating to stock market, but that's not quite finished yet.
All right. As soon as it is, let us know. Thank you, Lucy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Lucy Commissar, her piece that we talked about today, How the Food Industry Eats Your Kids' Lunch, in the New York Times Sunday Review section just, what is today, Tuesday, 2 days ago. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing The Hour and Chrissy Pease for on-air production. And thanks for your many phone calls. We will have a follow-up to this about the good that may be happening in Wisconsin schools as well. It's always good to talk about the good when you're talking about the bad, too. So prepare for that. Another hour coming up.